Hey, everybody. Host Nora McInerney is back for season two of The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, a podcast from Ruby Studio and AbbVie. In each episode, Nora has a real conversation with real people living with chronic migraine to see how they took action to understand this disease. So jump into the conversation for season two, a show that creates a little more space for empathy and understanding in such a complicated world. There shouldn't be so much hesitation around asking questions and asking for help. So don't wait. Join The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, and learn a little bit more about life with chronic migraine. Hey, everybody. If you've been looking for love at first sight, it's closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to June 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And this is Stuff You Should Know. Chuck, Sashay, Shantae.
Just a couple of drag queens hanging out. Talking shop.
We should say Chuck and I are both in full drag right now.
That's right. You did a nice job with the hair, the wig I like.
Thank you. You find it too big, is it?
No, you can't get too big if you're a drag queen.
And I'm a little more fishy than glamour.
The lashes are nice, and I notice, keeping with the tradition set by
Julian Eltinge,
your hands are quite feminine.
Oh, well, I'm holding them in a very feminine manner.
Well done.
Thank you.
They're powdered just right. The knuckles aren't as hairy as usual.
And I like your campy drag.
Thank you.
I had no idea that your forearms were so big and that you had an anchor tattoo.
That's right. And if you notice my crotch, you won't notice anything.
Smooth as a Ken doll.
That's right. It's taped and tucked.
You're wearing a gaff, eh?
So that's really all you need to know.
I went online and looked up how to make a gaff or gaffs. I was like, I think I understand what this is, but I need to find out. Mm-hmm. And I saw a YouTube tutorial by a drag queen.
Sure.
How to make one out of like an underwear waistband, like an elastic band.
Yeah.
And a tube sock cut on either end so it's open.
Okay.
And you just slide the tube sock, or no, you slide the elastic band through the open tube sock.
Mm-hmm.
And step into the elastic band,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it makes two holes that way.
Sure.
For your legs. And then I guess everything gets real compressed.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. I use duct tape. It's a little more uncomfortable. I'm going to use your method for that video too.
It looked cheap, easy, quick, and as comfortable as that kind of thing can be.
So, people, if you are not one that reads titles to podcasts and you just say, you know, I'm going to hear what's going on,
mm-hmm.
we're talking about drag queens. And it has an interesting history, and it's an interesting culture, and we like to cover those things.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
Well, this is a Conger article.
Yes, Kristen Conger from Stuff Mom Never Told You.
Yeah, and she did a really good job of like kind of tracing the history and like really getting into the culture of drag queens.
Yeah.
And it turns out that there is a considered father of drag queens. Although he went to great pains to suggest that he wasn't gay.
That's because he was totally gay.
I think so. Like, I noticed she used she pointed out that he was a bachelor.
Yeah, I looked up more on that. It was often rumored that we're talking about who we mentioned earlier with the hands, Julian Eltinge.
Mm-hmm. Eltinge.
And born William Dalton. And this is early 20th century, and he made a big, big name for himself.
Yeah.
Dressing like a lady.
Yeah.
And performing.
In vaudeville, he started out, I guess, as a vaudeville performer, but then he was in a play called The Fascinating Widow in 1911.
Yeah.
And apparently the ladies loved him.
Of course.
Loved his drag because he was just really good at it.
Yeah.
And from there, he ended up on screen
uh-huh.
in films.
Sponsorship deals?
Yeah, he apparently was the highest salaried performer of his age.
That's crazy.
There were fan magazines dedicated to him and like dressing up as women.
He had zines, multiple zines.
Yeah, at least three.
Mm-hmm.
He performed for King Edward VII of the UK. That's who right. was delighted by his performance.
Of course he was.
So this guy, Julian Eltinge, just like making quite a name for himself. And again, he went to great lengths to be like, look at me. I'm a guy. See, I'm smoking cigars and I'm fishing.
Yeah. But like I said, I looked into it more and apparently he would attack people in the audience sometimes when they would yell out derogatory terms about his masculinity.
Oh, yeah.
And he would challenge people to fights and things, and he was a lifelong bachelor. So I think that probably meant that he was gay.
Right.
Which is fine, because as a crossdresser, you can be gay or straight. Doesn't matter. You can right. be transgender. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
There are all different stripes of people who like to put on the opposite clothes of whatever their gender is, because they're kings as well, and perform on stage. It's just, you know, it's fun. It's a lighthearted, fun thing.
Right. Well, that's the whole point of it. It's supposed to be lighthearted and fun.
Yeah.
It wasn't always, though. There was a very long period where when men dressed up as women on stage, it was because women weren't allowed to perform on stage. So men were frequently like doing this straight, very seriously
yeah.
in dramas. In Greece, in ancient Greece, it was considered dangerous for women to be on stage. And they were not allowed to be in any of the Greek dramas.
That's
which
right.
is kind of ironic because the Greek theater arose out of the rites of Dionysus, which were performed almost exclusively by women.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but once it was established as theater, the men were like, thank you for bringing this to our attention. No, go over there because it's too dangerous here.
Right. Very interesting.
Yeah.
And in the Middle Ages, of course, the Christian church chimed in and said, you know what? Here's what theater is. It is, Bible stories on stage in church pageants, basically.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you used to like the theater?
Right.
Well, get a load of this, because this is what it is now.
Yeah, and women were not allowed to take part in that. Of course, men would play the parts of women. And it wasn't until the 17th century in opera that women finally, the stage opened up and they were allowed to tread the boards.
Yeah, if in Shakespeare's era, men played both roles. And I think, what was it, 1660? That one of the kings in England,
Charles II,
yeah, the sequel, he said, you know what, let's let the ladies back on stage. But even after that, this idea of men dressing up as women still continued on.
Yeah, and women are actually dressing as men in what they call breeches roles.
Right.
Because they wore breeches.
That's pretty straightforward terminology. But King Charles called the bluff of all the performers. He was like, you know what? You don't have to dress as women anymore. We'll just let women on stage. And the guys were like,
but
we, fine. We really like this.
Yeah. And well, what happened too was men started to play women in a funnier way. And it was more for comedy because they wouldn't try to look super feminine. They would try to look like a big burly man in a dress, which is sort of like in the Monty Python tradition. Like,
yeah.
Although they weren't exactly feminine.
No. They were not fishy at all.
But we'll get to that. That's actually a thing.
Yeah.
Fishy drag.
Yeah.
Well, you might as well tell them.
Well, I already mentioned it earlier. I said I'm more fishy than camp.
Yeah, but I don't think they understand. Fishy
is going after like you want people to confuse you for a woman.
Exactly.
Like as feminine as like womanly as possible is like dead on.
Right.
Yeah.
And then campy is obviously more for comedy, you're more masculine looking.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, of course, the glamour drag, which is
huge hair,
everyone's
huge
favorite.
Eyelashes right. and glittery dresses.
So back to history, though. Interestingly, when the West was loosening restrictions mm-hmm. in Japan and the East, they were tightening them and making men, once again, play the onagata roles, female impersonators, in kabuki productions. They're like, the ladies cannot do kabuki any longer.
Yeah, and that lasted through the 19th century in Japan.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's weird how it was like, I guess if you're a woman, you could have been in Japan, and then when they closed it down in Japan, you could have gone over to England.
Yeah.
Bam.
I guess so.
You're all set.
Traveling performer.
So in the West, in England in particular, that whole King Charles II bluff that was called, where that became eventually the idea that if you were dressing in drag on stage,
mm-hmm.
It was for laughs.
Right.
You weren't trying to pull off being a woman. You were
right.
trying to just make fun of the juxtaposition of you, big, burly dude, wearing a dress and acting as a woman, but
right.
not doing a very good job of it. That gave rise to a type of theater called pantomime. And it is the shortened term of it is panto. And I guess mime is the other half of what came out of this.
Yeah.
But panto theater is like a big burly dudes in drag playing the women, and then a woman playing like a young male who's now being inducted into the world of sex.
Right.
And the adult, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the first panto play was from 1723, right?
Yeah, it started out there and then spread over to the United States in the form of, you know, before movie theaters and things like that, America's favorite entertainment was when the vaudeville show came through.
Sometimes that was your only entertainment.
Yeah.
That or like shooting at things in your yard.
So it was their favorite and also their most hated form of entertainment.
Right.
Because that was it.
Yeah.
So the vaudeville act would roll through town and there would, you know, there'd be all kinds of theater and weird performances and jugglers and ventriloquists and acrobats and
banjos.
Things like that. Banjos. And then actually drag performances to the delight of families and children. And it was all seen as just good fun. There was no link to homosexuality at the time.
At the least, America wasn't putting its hang-ups about homosexuality onto drag performances.
Yeah, well, then that really came about at the turn of the century. That's when people got a little more like, hey, what's going on here? As gay people came out of the closet a little bit more and into the forefront a little bit more, and we mean in very small steps, obviously, back then.
Yeah.
People like, well, wait a minute. Why are these guys dressing up like ladies all of a sudden?
Right,
like,
right.
Is this fun or is this, like, wrong?
Right. You like this, don't you?
Right. And because of Prohibition, people needed their little speakeasies, their little secret places to go drink. It also birthed secret places for gay dudes to go hang out.
Yeah.
Created the first gay bars initially.
Right. Which ultimately, in turn, about 40 years later, started to give rise to the first discos. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
They grew out of gay bars.
That's right.
And they're New York, Chicago, big towns, probably Kansas City at the time.
Sure. San Francisco.
Went through what was called a pansy craze.
Yeah.
Not our term.
No.
And where basically it became like the era of the gay man coming out of the closet. Like there were lots of bars to go to. There were lots of nightclubs. It was like, the first gay culture in the United States really started to come about.
Yeah.
And I remember I read somewhere that, cocaine used to be a gay drug.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They called it, I'm sorry to say this. They used to call cocaine fairy dust.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was so favored by gay guys around this time. Because I guess you could get it legally.
When was this, in like the 50s or 40s
and 30s?
No, like
the 20s.
Oh, okay.
The 20s, maybe the 30s.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Interesting. So by the 1950s, this is when, there were actual laws against being gay and laws against dressing as a woman. And in fact, in New York City, which you would think would be super forward thinking, in the 1950s, they had a cross-dressing law, or I guess anti-cross-dressing law, that said that you, as a man, were legally bound to wear no fewer than 3 pieces of male clothing in order to not be arrested for being in drag.
Right, and this is a problem for these gay bars because they frequently had drag shows.
Sure.
So I guess I was thinking, like, you just maybe do, like a full-on, full-circle cross-dress where you dress as a woman dressing as a man?
As a woman. Victor Victoria.
He just blew my mind.
That was Victor Victoria. That was the movie.
Right.
And with Julie Andrews. It was a woman impersonating a man impersonating a woman.
I thought that was Burt Reynolds.
No, it was Julie Andrews.
She did a really good job.
You're thinking of Deliverance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that went way different than Victor Victoria.
So by the time the 1960s, mid-60s rolled around, there's a Conger cites a book called Mother Camp, where they estimated about 500 regularly performing drag queens by 1966.
Yeah.
It's a pretty high number for back then.
Yeah, I would imagine, although I'm sure it's quite a lot more than that now. But we're talking the 60s, and this is a time when if you were at a gay bar, just being dressed in drag,
yeah,
like there was a pretty high likelihood the cops were going to come busting down the door and take you to jail and probably beat you up for being gay.
Yeah.
So yeah, 500 performing out in the open is, I would imagine, that's a pretty good number.
But at the time, there were newer performers that, like Eltange, wanted this one guy, Bailey, Jim Bailey, who apparently did a spot-on Judy Garland.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very adamant about saying, no, I'm not a cross-dresser, I'm not a drag queen, I am a female impersonator. And he, you know, had a long run in the business as such. But
yeah.
It was a big distinction for him.
Yeah. He wanted to be called an illusionist. And that makes the point that I think you said earlier, not everyone who does drag is gay. And not everyone who does drag cross-dresses in their offstage life.
Yeah.
But for the most part, if you're going to put money on whether or not a drag queen is gay, you can probably bet that they probably are under normal circumstances.
Yeah, I don't think we even mentioned the drag queen, where that came from, the term.
Oh, no, we didn't.
That would have been good in the intro.
It would have been.
Let's just do it here.
Well, when we were talking about theater, it would have been a good one. You know, true love is always being excited from the first moment you see one another. And every time after that, it's taking long walks together in the summer or gazing longingly into each other's eyes and watching their tail wag when they chase a squirrel in the yard.
Well, the Pedigree brand asked about believing in love at first sight. And honestly, the answer is yes. As everyone knows from listening to this show, we have pulled all of our dogs off the street that Emily and I have had over the years, either right off the street or through a local shelter and working with them. And they've all become valued family members. And we think they've appreciated it, too.
Yeah, Chuck, there is a Pedigree loyalty survey that found that 90% of first-time dog owners report having a dog improved at least one of their relationships, and 80% of first-time dog owners are overwhelmingly more likely to have made at least one new connection as a result of getting a dog. And 95% of all dog owners say that the bond they have with their dogs is closer than they ever expected. Not a big surprise.
That's true. We all know that adopting a dog can lead to a lifetime meaningful connection, and real love can exist between a pet and a pet parent.
You got that straight.
Pedigree is committed to helping more dogs find loving homes. Opening your home to a dog can help open your heart. And love at first sight is closer than you think because it's available at your local dog shelter.
Yeah, very important point. You can find love at first sight with the Pedigree Adoption Drive from June 7th to June 9th. And the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
That's right. So just visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions.
Hey, everyone. Host Nora McInerney is back for season 2 of The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, a podcast from Ruby Studio and AbbVie. In each episode, Nora has real conversations with real people living with chronic migraine to see how they take action to understand the disease.
That's right. Recognizing how a migraine attack can change the course of your day, she unpacks each guest's journey and how they talk to their doctors to find the treatment plans that are right for them.
Yep. Along with headache specialist Dr. Christopher Ryan and other special guests, Nora speaks to these incredible people who've channeled their feelings of isolation in their chronic migraine journey into advocacy and art. Plus, there are also 8 episodes of their first season available for you to binge.
So jump into the conversation for season 2, a show that creates a little more space for empathy and understanding in such a complicated world. There shouldn't be so much hesitation around asking questions and asking for help. So don't wait. Join The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, as they learn a little bit more about life with chronic migraine.
All right, so the term drag was the original parlance for men dressing in women's clothing, and I didn't
see... It's a theater term.
Yeah, theater term, but I don't know where that came from, though.
I don't either.
Okay. And then queen, of course, is a you know...
Slur.
A slur.
For an effeminate gay man.
Sure, so drag queen.
Put together, you just got the term drag queen.
That's right. So, it's underground.
Oh, and also we should say transvestite, transsexual... Not really favored terms in the gay community, especially these days, because, up until not that long ago in the DSM, and possibly still listed in the DSM, those are mental disorders. People who do that are mentally ill, according to psychology.
Which is fairly ridiculous. We should encourage people to go listen to our, what do we call that one?
Gender reassignment?
Gender reassignment.
That was a good one.
That was a really good one. So in the 1960s, things start coming out. People start coming out. Drag queens start becoming more visible. And then, of course, in 1969, I know we've promised this podcast, we'll do it at some point, the famous Stonewall riots took place, wherein on June 28th, New York City police raided the Stonewall Inn.
Which was run by the mafia at the time, and it was New York's only gay bar.
Run by the mafia.
Yeah.
Interesting. And they fought back, and there was a six-day, basically, riot fight going on between cops and these gay guys.
Yeah. They just said, you know what? We may dress like ladies, but we fight like dudes.
That's right. We're not going to take it, basically.
Yeah. And so and pretty much from there, the gay rights movement in the U.S. was born. And not even pretty much like, yeah, it happened right there. But Conger kind of describes the scene that it was a six-day skirmish with high-heel-wearing drag queens. But you can imagine that that probably was quite a scene.
Oh, yeah?
Quite a tableau.
Yeah, they should do a movie about that.
They did.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called. It's a documentary.
Oh, a documentary.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a bunch. But there's one like before Stonewall or after Stonewall. Maybe just Stonewall.
During Stonewall?
Yeah. Perry Stonewall.
So in the mid-1960s, when all this is blossoming, a guy named Jose Julio Saria in San Francisco, Harvey Milk was not the first openly gay political candidate in San Francisco.
No.
It was actually Saria. And he founded something called the Imperial Court System, and it was basically a drag community organization to help people out and throw drag balls and, you know, now is philanthropic with HIV and AIDS organizations.
Yeah.
So they're still around.
Doing things. They're bigger than ever. Chapters all over the place.
All over the place. Different countries, Canada, Mexico.
Yeah, but the Imperial Court System was a really big step. This was in the mid-60s. I think it was before Stonewall, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And this is in the face of, like, crackdowns, getting arrested, getting beat up, really being mistreated, and not having any civil rights. This guy forms the Imperial Court System, and it's, like, one of the first big steps at unifying not just the drag community, but the gay community.
Sure.
And really kind of provided this basis or this template for, you know, integration and support with among gays around the country. And I guess a way to say, hey, there's a lot of other people over here that feel the same way you do and think the same way you do. And it's not just here in San Francisco. It's not just here in New York. They're all over the place. And this was one of the first cohesions of that mentality.
Right.
Which is a big, big deal.
Yeah, it was. And the drag balls that they initiated and started became very popular within the African-American drag community.
Mm-hmm.
And these days, Conger described it as like a fraternity system where if you're an up-and-comer and you're a drag queen, you can get sort of like a sponsor, a mother or a father, to help you out, show you the ropes. Maybe if you were kicked out of your house by your parents because you're not accepted or out of your hometown, they'll put you up and find you a place to live. And
you know who else does that?
Who?
Cyndi Lauper.
Does she really?
Yeah. She, I think, founded and definitely funds like some sort of rescue system.
Like a halfway house?
Yeah, for teens who are kicked out for being gay.
Nice.
Isn't that?
Yeah, she's awesome.
She is.
I think I've told you I went to her Halloween party one year in New York.
You did not tell me that.
Yeah. My friend is a huge fan and like on the inside as far as fandom, you know, like she knows who he is. And he got an invitation to her Halloween party at her loft in New York. And I went and it was awesome. And I met her and got a picture made. And
that is cool.
She was as sweet as she could be.
Yeah. Yeah. She seems like she's like living the personality.
Yeah. And boy, what a party, man.
I can imagine.
Whew.
Yeah. You mean crazy. I went and saw her a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
And Dr. John opened for her.
Oh, wow.
So we were there for, you know, the Dr. John show, too. And when Dr. John ended, like, everyone got up and left, and then new people came in and sat down for the Cyndi Lauper show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was a weird mix, but that didn't end up mixing.
That's like...
it was cool to see both of them.
Like Zac Brown opening for Dolly Parton.
Yeah, something like that. Maybe even weirder.
Like, they're both country, quote unquote.
Right.
All right. So if you're interested in seeing more about the African-American drag balls, there's a great documentary called Paris is Burning.
Have you seen it?
Huh? Yeah, it's really...
I've not seen it.
Super entertaining.
Cool.
Really good. And we mentioned drag kings earlier. That is a thing. Women mm-hmm. can also dress as men.
Yeah, which was not a stretch. Once drag queens were established, a guy named Johnny Science about 1989 said, what about drag kings?
Yeah.
And bam, there they are.
That's right. So let's talk about what you need to do. What kind of transformation needs to take place I know we kind of hinted at it earlier with our jokes about tucking and plucking. But
jokes?
That's where it starts. And we remarked about your hands. Julian Eltinge was, you'd think, you know, all the work goes on the face, but he said the most important thing is the hands.
Well, that was the one that he worried about the most.
Sure.
Well, you remember that Seinfeld.
Man hands?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that makes, I can imagine it's very distracting if you have a couple of chunks of ham.
Yeah.
You know, and you're acting very effeminate or whatever. That's weird.
Yeah, they went so over the top in that episode. How big was, like, I'm sure it was like the key grip or something.
Yeah.
Breaking the bread and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. That was great. Like, just disintegrating.
You got the something
bread
on your face.
Yeah. That was so good.
All right. So what do you do? You got to get the hands powdered, and he said there's certain ways of holding them to make them appear to be more dainty.
Well, he did. I got the impression that he was particularly obsessed about this, but he
might have had big hands.
Spend like an hour and a half just working on the hands. That's just the hands. So you can guess how long it takes to like do makeup.
Yeah.
Because not only are you doing makeup, you have to do it right, but you have to do it to cover up the fact that you're a man.
Sure.
So you have to like cover up the fact that you're a man and then do the makeup as a woman, I imagine.
Yeah, and I think things really picked up in the 70s with this as far as really going all out after a San Francisco drag show collective called the Coquettes. Apparently they put on a not-so-great show, and Gore Vidal himself said famously in his review, no talent is not enough.
Yeah.
So he's like, great, you're drag queens, but this is awful, basically.
Yeah.
You still got to like give the audience something.
Well, they were also not necessarily like real drag queens. They were a bunch of hippies on acid.
Oh, sure.
And they basically did their own pretty much improv musical that sucked.
Yeah.
But the fact that they were doing it in drag made the real drag community, and I may be wrong, but I have the impression they weren't like representative of the real drag community.
Yeah,
say,
you're probably right.
Whoa, this can, like, people are paying attention. And people want, like, a good show.
Yeah.
So let's give it to them.
Yeah, give them some talent.
Yeah, and that show, that Coquette show,
yeah,
was, like, kind of a turning point as far as, like, let's do this right. If you're going to dress up like a woman, do it right.
Yeah, and if you've ever been, you ever been to a drag show?
I've seen them before, yeah.
I've been to a few, and I've been to some ones that were great, and I've been to some ones that sucked.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like any other theatrical experience, it's like, it makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
If it's bad, it's real bad.
You know? Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, seriously, it's the same as like, well, it's the same like watching improv or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, if you see people who are really good at improv,
it's amazing.
And then you see people who are just trying improv,
yeah,
you can't even put them in the same league. It's like Dolly Parton and Zac Brown.
All right. So in order to kick it up a notch, they had to start taking more care with their appearance. And the first step, if you're interested in giving this a shot, and you're a dude, is to shave.
That's a pretty good first step.
And
if
like
you're going
really
fishy
shave.
Or glamour.
Yeah.
Yeah, real close shave.
As close as you can get.
If you're doing campy, you might not necessarily have to shave.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I could get up there with my beard
mm-hmm.
and be thoroughly disgusting as a woman.
Just kind of hump the air without moving your arms.
The next thing you need to do is you need to apply lots and lots of makeup in a tradition called beating your face or beating your mug.
Yep.
And that's what they call it in the drag community. That's really like a lot of cosmetics. You want to hide like heavy jawlines and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just slather it on, basically. The more the better, depending on what you're going for, of course.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're going like real feminine, you got to be careful.
Sure.
You can't just cake it on. You have to take some skill, I would think.
That's right.
And
then the tuck.
Yeah, the tuck. We talked about the gaff. You can also use tape. I guess you could also tuck if you're just going to walk like a penguin or whatever all night.
Yeah, or like Buffalo Bill.
Right.
Yeah.
Or I think it was Scary Movie 2 when one of the Wayans brothers is like, There's a shot of like the waist up. He's like, he has his arms out like he's showing off his shirt. He's like, what do you guys think? Tucked or untucked? And then they pan out and he's tucked in. He has his legs pressed together. Everybody's like, untucked.
I didn't see those movies. That sounds funny though.
Oh, those were surprisingly funny movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I like the spoof movie. I just sort of grew out of them after Airplane and the Naked Gun movies. I didn't really see a whole lot of them after that.
They're good. At least the first four.
So after you've done your tucking and your taping and you're all fit tight down there, you might want to add some breasts. It's probably a pretty good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You can add silicone, although they can be expensive. And I'm not talking about implants. I'm talking about a silicone implant that you would, like, put in a brassiere.
Right. Or there's ones that adhere to your body and, like your body temperature adheres them to your body. And they're like,
really?
Well, that's what this article says. I don't, it's not like I'm in the fake breasts.
I didn't notice that part. That sounds gross.
Yeah. She's saying Congress says that, like, these things are like a couple of $100 for, like, the really good ones that are really realistic. So I imagine, again, if you're going fishy, it probably just, it takes a lot more time.
Yeah.
A lot more effort and a lot more money to be a fishy drag queen.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier just to, you know, be campy and look funny. And
sure.
And then, of course, the name is a big, big part of the culture. Generally, the names are sort of like Bart Simpson's prank calls, you know, like...
Amanda Hug and Kiss?
Yeah, exactly. Most of the names are like that.
Head of Lettuce?
Yeah, Head of Lettuce. I looked up some of my favorites.
Okay.
Madam Ovary. That's a good one. Gene Poole.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times too, it's toying with the fact of gender and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Wilma Ballsdrop.
Good Lord.
Tess Tosterone. And, then a nice clean one for everyone out there. Della Katessen.
That's nice.
Those are just a few of the funny ones.
That's like a throwback to the vaudeville when drag shows were family friendly.
That's right.
Good, clean fun.
No, it's still good, clean fun.
Delicatessen. Yeah. Head of Lettuce. Wilma Balls Drop.
But the name is a big part of it. You know, coming up with a great name can really, like, that just kicks it off right, because when you're announced, if it's a great name, the audience is tickled from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a bad name, they're like, oh, God, what's this going to be?
Right.
You know?
So what are you doing this for, Chuck?
Well, there's all different kinds of things. A regular drag performance that I've been to is either lip syncing or actually performing like karaoke style,
mm-hmm,
on stage one after another. There's usually an MC in drag handling the whole show.
Right.
And it's basically like just a, you know, stage performance singing.
Right.
But they can also like get real gigs.
Well, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
hosting.
Or being, I guess, kind of a party promoter.
Yeah.
Like just kind of circulating around a party, like keeping everything light.
Like, what's more fun than hiring a drag queen to come to your party and just kind of liven things up?
I think that's a great idea.
You know?
Yeah. As RuPaul said, the whole point is to not take life too seriously.
Exactly.
So when you have somebody dressed as a woman, not taking life too seriously, your guests are probably going to lighten up a little bit too. If you have those, like, somebody wandering around saying, I'm Head of Lettuce.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we can't not mention Australia, because for some reason, even though Australia is the center of masculinity on the planet, it's rife with drag queens.
Thanks to a particular movie.
Is it because of that, or was that already a thing and they just highlighted that? I wonder.
I took it that it was that the movie was its own thing and, uh-huh, just created this huge cult following that has basically put Australia on the map. That's how I took it.
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, of course, is the movie.
Yeah.
Which you've seen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, very good movie.
I've seen parts of, like, Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Yeah, I never saw that one. Something about Swayze, I just couldn't get over.
Swayze, Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, like Guy Pearce, perfect. Swayze.
Holy cow, Guy Pearce was one of the ones in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert? I didn't know that. Who was anybody else that is a star now?
Well, yeah, it was definitely Guy Pearce and Hugo Weaving from The Matrix.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Mr. Anderson.
Yeah.
Or actually, he wasn't Mr. Anderson. He was whatever his name was. And then Terrence Stamp, of course, a legendary Terrence Stamp. And it was The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for it on Netflix or whatever, you should watch it. It's a fun movie.
Yeah.
And Terrence Stamp in drag, I was like, that's something else. He's the limey, you know?
Right. So ultimately, what you're trying to do is get a job in a movie about drag queens.
Yeah,
or to become RuPaul.
That's true. And they have apparently a show last year in Australia, a reality show, where their drag queens are taking that same journey that they did in the movie.
Right.
And it's on TV now.
Right. Apparently, though, there's not a lot of money. That you do it for the love, for the adoration.
Yeah, of course.
There was a study of drag queens down in Key West, which is like Drag Queen Central.
Uh-huh.
If you've ever watched CNN's New Year's Eve broadcast.
I have not.
Yeah. It's like all drag queens down there. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And then they drop like a drag queen in a giant high heel I think is what they do. Oh, really? Until, instead of like the,
yeah, the star, the yeah. ball or whatever.
But they did a study of drag queens down in Key West and they average about $200 a week. So they're doing it for the love, people. Tip them.
Yeah. And I think probably every drag queen out there spends way more money than they're making.
Yeah.
You know, hosting and doing gigs like that.
So we mentioned, RuPaul.
Yeah. We did not mention Mae West.
No. Well, she apparently took a, she based her character or her persona on a drag queen named Bert Savoy.
Okay.
Born Everett McKenzie. So that's weird. He was a drag queen, but he changed his name to another a male name.
Huh.
Anyway, he had a very familiar catchphrase, "You must come over." And she took that and turned it into, "Come up sometime and see me."
Yeah. And people out there are going, "No, Josh, that's not it. It's why don't you come up and see me sometime."
Yeah, you're wrong.
Yeah, that's a misquote.
Yeah, and similarly, Clint Eastwood based his throaty voice on Marilyn Monroe.
Shut up.
Swear to God.
What do you mean, his throaty voice, he based it on her?
He didn't really talk like that. He, that's, he,
what did he talk like? He's like, "Hi, I'm Clint Eastwood."
Right. He talked like the generic teenage cashier from The Simpsons.
Wow.
No, he said, as far as Uncle John's Bathroom Reader,
that he based his voice on Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, that he said that.
Crazy.
Yeah.
All right, should we mention a few of these famous drag queens?
Yes.
Danny LaRue.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in England and you're not into Eddie Izzard, then Danny LaRue is probably your guy, or at least until 2009 when he sadly passed away.
Yeah.
But well, he was big back in the day.
Yeah, in like the 50s, 60s, 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Earned a lot of money. Doris Fish.
Mm-hmm. Another Australian.
Uh-huh.
Who moved to San Francisco and wrote and starred in the film Vegas in Space. Have you seen that?
No, have you?
No.
It's a cult film, apparently.
Yeah. Not about cults. It's just like has a cult following.
Yeah. And sadly, he died of AIDS in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
Divine, of course, anyone who's a John Waters fan, or should we say a Harris Milstead fan. I didn't know that wasn't his real name.
Harris Glenn Milstead. I didn't either.
Divine was John Waters, one of his favorite people to put in his films, and did some kind of gross things in earlier movies like Pink Flamingos.
What did she do with dog poop?
Ate it, I believe.
God, that's gross.
If I'm not mistaken. Divine, of course, made her biggest role in Hairspray as Edna Turnblad, and that's who John Travolta played in the musical version.
I didn't know that.
Did you ever see it?
No.
It's an abomination.
Is it really?
It's pretty bad.
Where'd you see it?
It's a movie, you know?
Oh.
Yeah, they did Hairspray on Broadway, and then they turned the Broadway show into a musical.
Right.
And Travolta starred in the movie version of the musical.
Okay, but wait. Where did Divine star in the movie, right? Hairspray.
The original Hairspray before it was a Broadway musical.
So they did a movie, turned it into a musical, and then turned the musical into a movie?
Yes.
That is mind-bending.
It is, very much.
There's Dame Edna.
Not a fan.
Oh, no?
No, are you?
Yeah. Thought she was pleasant.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan, but that is definitely one of the more famous. And I think, who played him?
Barry Humphries, another Australian.
Yeah, but wasn't he also keen to say, like, "I'm not a drag queen"?
Yeah. She was a character that he played, and he didn't consider it, like, drag.
Right.
And she's retired. Woof.
All right. I just showed Josh a picture of Travolta in that movie.
She's, man, stop that.
Yeah.
she's retired as of 2012. There's Dame Edna has moved off to Florida, I guess.
All right. Anyone else?
Lady Bunny.
Who's Lady Bunny?
Lady Bunny is a Jill of all trades, Conger says, a multi-talented comedian, DJ, and actress. She founded Wigstock.
Oh, I've heard of Wigstock.
See, here's a picture of Lady Bunny. She's got a huge wig.
Oh, okay.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know Wigstock. That's fun. And Wigstock is no longer either. That ran for about a decade. Or, I'm sorry, 2 decades. 85 to 2005.
Yeah, right on the nose.
So that's drag queens.
Yep.
Go see a drag show if you've never done it. If you're visiting New York in the big city, you've never been.
Yeah.
And you're from, oh, I don't know, Kansas.
You don't even know you go to New York, man. Like,
sure.
The drag show I went to was in Savannah. That's a huge drag town.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah. I'm just saying, if you're visiting the big city for the first time, go check out a drag show. Be open-minded.
Yeah.
Have some fun. Have a drink. And it's a good time.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we didn't really describe them much, because you kind of got to see them for yourself.
Well, and you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. You know? It could be terrible or it could be great.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you want to learn more about drag queens, you can type those words into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And since I said drag queens, that means it's time for a message break. Stuff you should know. You know, true love is always being excited from the first moment you see one another. And every time after that, it's taking long walks together in the summer or gazing longingly into each other's eyes and watching their tail wag when they chase a squirrel in the yard.
Well, the Pedigree brand asked about believing in love at first sight, and honestly, the answer is yes. As everyone knows from listening to this show, we have pulled all of our dogs off the street that Emily and I have had over the years, either right off the street or through a local shelter and working with them, and they've all become valued family members, and we think they've appreciated it too.
Yeah, Chuck, there is a Pedigree loyalty survey that found that 90% of first-time dog owners report having a dog improved at least one of their relationships, and 80% of first-time dog owners are overwhelmingly more likely to have made at least one new connection as a result of getting a dog. And 95% of all dog owners say that the bond they have with their dogs is closer than they ever expected. Not a big surprise.
That's true. We all know that adopting a dog can lead to a lifetime meaningful connection, and real love can exist between a pet and a pet parent.
You got that straight.
Pedigree is committed to helping more dogs find loving homes. Opening your home to a dog can help open your heart. And love at first sight is closer than you think, because it's available at your local dog shelter.
Yeah, very important point. You can find love at first sight with the Pedigree Adoption Drive from June 7th to June 9th. And the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
That's right. So just visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions.
Hey, everyone. Host Nora McInerney is back for season 2 of The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, a podcast from Ruby Studio and AbbVie. In each episode, Nora has real conversations with real people living with chronic migraine to see how they take action to understand the disease.
That's right. Recognizing how a migraine attack can change the course of your day, she unpacks each guest's journey and how they talk to their doctors to find the treatment plans that are right for them.
Yep, along with headache specialist Dr. Christopher Ryan and other special guests, Nora speaks to these incredible people who've channeled their feelings of isolation in their chronic migraine journey into advocacy and art. Plus, there are also 8 episodes of their first season available for you to binge.
So jump into the conversation for season 2, a show that creates a little more space for empathy and understanding in such a complicated world. There shouldn't be so much hesitation around asking questions and asking for help. So don't wait. Join The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, as they learn a little bit more about life with chronic migraine.
Now it's time for listener mail.
Good, because we're actually going to give advice to this kid.
Okay.
This should be good.
Good advice, or?
I don't know. We'll see. Right. I think we should just wing it. Hey, guys, and Jerry. First off, I'm a huge fan, and I'm about to graduate after 5 long years at the University of Washington in Seattle.
Go Huskers.
Huskies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Instead of getting a degree in something practical that would set me up for a great job like business or engineering, I follow my interest, which I think is great, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be getting a BA in Spanish and a BS in astronomy and physics.
Awesome.
That being said, guys, I'm about to graduate in 5 weeks, and I really have nothing lined up for when I enter the, quote, real world.
Can you send me some money?
I know I want to go back to school eventually for something involving education, but I was curious if you have any suggestions or advice of what I should do in the meantime. I'm a little stressed about it, to be honest, so I thought I would turn to the duo that never leads me astray. And this is Owen... And he says it's pronounced something like Cephas. So
okay.
I'm going to say Owen Cephas, but it's spelled, it's just got a lot of consonants in it.
You're going to, let me see. Jeez.
Yeah, so that's Cephas, apparently.
Okay.
So, Owen, advice. Of course, the first thing I'm going to say is travel, and probably Josh, too, because it's always good, after you finish college, to get out there and see a little bit of the world, because it might inform your decisions in life. It might open you up to something you might want to do.
I have some job advice.
Okay.
I would say, just like college, follow your passions.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, like, wow, I really, really am hardcore into Spanish, figure out something to use that,
yeah.
some way to use that. Or astronomy. It's a pretty narrow use of that, but you never know. Like, if you, there could be a company out there that loves employing astronomers. And
yeah.
just has them sit around all day talking about astronomy.
If he's into education eventually, he could go get a job at a science center.
Yeah.
And work with a big telescope and a planetarium and delight and entertain school children.
Right.
But if you're studying Spain, dude, and you have some time, Spanish, I would say go to Spain.
Sure.
Get a ticket. Go to Spain. Check things out. Might fall in love. Might decide on a job. You might just eat some good paella and have a good time and go home and be broke.
Yeah. I say get a job, hippie. But make sure it's a job you love.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point to me. It's like, that's what we both did. We figured out what we loved and we parlayed them into jobs, you know?
Yeah, later in life as well. So kids, you don't have to have it all locked down right after graduation. You
yeah.
know?
And also, Owen, one thing that I've learned is that you almost never use the actual degree that you majored in. Like, it's almost never applied to the actual job you get.
I don't know.
Oh, think about this.
I'm an English major.
Right. I was a history major. That has nothing to do with my job.
Dude, are you kidding me?
Anthropology.
We do history all the time.
Right.
Anthropology.
But we were hired as writers, right?
Yeah. Okay. I see your point. But
so, like, there was a guy, I can't remember, who was the NBC chief that Seinfeld used to, like, mock? He actually became, like, a character when they were trying to sell the TV
show. Yeah,
I can't
remember.
In love with Elaine.
Uh-huh.
That's a real guy. And he actually was, like, the head of NBC for a while.
Yeah.
In, like, NBC's heyday, he did a beautiful job of, like, picking shows and sticking with them and
yeah.
steering them. And that was when NBC was dominating. He had a degree in psychology. That had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, but don't you think psychology helped him with dealing with, you know, high-powered people and...
No, I'll tell you what did it. He was doing what he loved, and hence what he was good at. And if you do that, you will always succeed.
Well, you know what?
Unless you're a philosophy major.
You sold me.
Good.
All right, so that was from Owen. Thanks for that. You're awesome. Let us know what you do. Like, follow up. I'd like to know, Owen.
Yeah.
If you go to Spain, I'd like to hear about it.
Or if you get a job, I want to hear about it.
All right.
How old is he? 5 years, so he's probably like 23.
Yeah, probably somewhere in there.
Whatever you do, Owen, good luck.
What if he's like 47? He failed to mention that.
Right.
I got a late start. I worked in a factory for 20 years.
Should I go travel to Spain?
Yes.
If you want some advice for me and Chuck, man, this can open a floodgate, I think, Chuck.
Sure.
You can tweet short questions to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to stuffpodcast@discovery.com. And you can always go check out our website for answers. It has all of them. That's stuffyoushouldknow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
This podcast is brought to you by BASF, the chemical company.
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Hey everybody, if you've been looking for love at first sight, it's closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So, this June 7th to June 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions.